Awesome. It's so good to be back with you. I don't remember how many times. I've been here a few times. I also remember being in this room for a wedding reception a while back, maybe 10 years ago. There was a dance in this room, or choreography, whatever you want to call it. We had a wedding celebration, but I have a lot of friends from this church. Trey, thank you for blessing me tonight. Jason, thank you for your words. And you called me when you invited me, but maybe back in June at the end of our phone conversation. When we ended, I don't know if you remember this, but you said, hey, man, I just need to speak a word of blessing over you before we get off the phone. And you did. And it came in a time of my life I was dry. I needed that word. So thank you for being faithful to it. I love your preacher, Chris. I heard Chris keynote back in Malibu and Pepperdine back in May. And there's sometimes I hear people preach, I want to give them a fist bump. Sometimes I want to give people a chest bump. And I just wanted to go and just hug Chris and just hold him. I was like, man, he preached in a way I just want to hug this man. Just he has a love for Jesus, a love for people. It's good to be with you. It has been a wild 6 weeks for my family. I had the month of July as a sabbatical, so I took the first two and a half weeks where I did a lot of soul care and repentance and searching my heart, and then my family went on a 16-day road trip to the West Coast. We put 4,700 miles on our van. Now, this story's going somewhere, all right? But one commitment I have a 12-year-old son and almost a 10-year-old son. And one thing we do, and we've done this now for 8 years, is we go to different baseball stadiums. Our goal is to hit every team, every Major League Baseball team, by the time my kids graduate high school. At the end of this trip, we're now at 18. We only have 12 left. We knocked off four on this trip: San Diego, Arizona, two LAs. My wife hasn't gone on any of them, but she said, I'm going to the Dodger game with you. Usually my wife stays back in a hotel, she orders in food, she watches Hallmark movies, and she loves it, all right? But she said, I'm going to the Dodger game. I said, why? She said, because I want to eat a Dodger dog in Dodger Stadium. I said, I can bring you a Dodger dog back to the hotel. And she said, I want to eat it in the stadium. I gave birth to those two boys, I can come. So she came with us. We went to San Diego, it was our last trip. The last stadium we hit on our trip. So my boys and I go to San Diego. We're staying downtown in a hotel. About the sixth inning, I get a text from my wife. She says, hey, I found a restaurant not too far from you. I want to go eat there. How about you guys meet me after the game? So after the game, put the restaurant in my maps. We walked and we met her at this restaurant. I had just eaten at the game. My boys did too. But I showed up at the restaurant. She's eating fish tacos. I ordered me some jambalaya because anytime I see jambalaya on a menu, I've got to get some. So we're there for a little while. But my boys were getting a little antsy. And I think they have a look they give each other sometimes when they're ready to get back to a hotel and go swimming or look at play on their little devices. So they're just pestering each other, and they're fighting, and I'm trying to hurry and eat my jambalaya, so we're in a hurry. So I'm like, sir, next time you come back here to fill up our drinks with water, will you bring me the ticket? I just need to go ahead and take care of this. So he brought me the ticket, put my credit card in there. He goes, I pay for it, give a tip. All right, we go back to the hotel. The next morning, I wake up before Casey and the boys do, and I go down to the lobby. I'm going to get a workout in. My wife also collects salt and pepper shakers. So I go to a store, and I see San Diego salt and pepper shakers. I'm going to buy them for my wife. She's going to love this. I pull out my money clip, and I look where I keep my credit card, and it wasn't there. And then it hit me. I left that credit card at that restaurant, and then I immediately blame my boys. It's because of them. They were fighting. That's why I had to do things really quick. Have you ever lost a credit card? Any show of hands? There's just a moment of panic. Because it's not like you can be like, I'll just take care of that when I get home. So I'm freaking out for a minute. What am I going to do? I'm going to have to set up a GoFundMe page just to get us back to Memphis from San Diego. But we did have another credit card, but I lost it. So I called the restaurant. They answered the phone at like 9:30 in the morning. I said, is there any chance someone left a credit card there last night? He said, sir, you're in luck. We have 7 credit cards from last night. I said, great, mine's a Bank of America one. He said, you're in luck, we have a Bank of America. And then he said, oh, wait, judging by the sound of your voice, your name's not LaToya, is it? I was like, it's not LaToya. So I lost my credit card, and then it hit me. I had just read a book back in June called Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership. It's a book by Ruth Haley Barton. And in the introduction, what she says is, your soul is kind of like your credit card. That sometimes you don't know you've lost it until something in your life happens and you reach for it and you can't find it. And she's not talking about losing your salvation and needing back in. She's talking about the soul, the conviction of who you are, like the foundation in your life, like who God put you on this planet to be. And if you don't nurture that soul, when those storms of life hit, you reach for it and you're like, whoa, where is it? Where did it go? And I remember reading that book and reading that chapter and thinking, I know people have lost their credit card, but that will never be me. And then here I am in that moment. And it caused me to do reflection on my own life. Like, where have been those moments? What have been those moments in my life when I've reached for that foundation, my soul, to strengthen me in a time of weakness? I saw this past week there was a roller coaster in Japan that goes upside down, and it got stuck upside down for 2 hours. Could you imagine that? I grew up in Dallas a few years ago at Six Flags. There's a roller coaster, and it does two loops called the Shockwave. It got stuck upside down for about 35 minutes in 95-degree weather. Now, this isn't a reason for you not to do roller coasters. It's probably not going to happen to you. But I bet there's been a moment in some of your lives where it feels like you were on this roller coaster, and you got stuck upside down. And you never asked for it. You never thought that would be you. There are times we're inducted into clubs we never want to be a part of, where you grieve the sudden death of a loved one, when divorce hits, or relational dysfunction, or bankruptcy, or cancer. So last October, my family and I, we really don't travel all the time, but we were down in Florida. We got away over fall break. Somebody gave us a condo for 2.5 days. So we get down there the first night, my mom calls. I answer the phone, and I could tell from her voice something was wrong. And she said, Josh, I hate to have to call and tell you this, but I have cancer. And I just froze. It's never the phone call you want to get. And we had to leave Florida the next day because a tropical storm was coming in, and my wife and I were also like suspended in this 48 to 72 hour period of not knowing what kind of tropical storm was about to hit our lives or our family. My mom ended up going through radiation and treatment, and she's now cancer free, so we do thank God for that. But I remember having this time where I'm thinking about, like, God, of all people in my family to be hit with cancer, like, my mom is like the most innocent person I know. Full of a love for Jesus. She taught me to pray. She taught me to connect with the heart of God, an evangelist. She's now a marriage and family therapist. She just thrives on helping people make it through life. And I'm like, why didn't cancer hit my dad or my brother or someone? Not really, I'm just joking, all right? But it's my mom. I mean, like, so innocent. And then I had these moments where, like, I try my best as a minister and a person where I don't want to compare pain or grief with anybody because we're all on this journey of life. I'm like, my mom just lost her daughter 9 years ago. Why does this have to happen to her and to our family now? Back in 2010, and I think I shared this maybe 4 or 5 years ago when I was here, but my sister, who was 31 at the time, was married, 9-year-old daughter, came down with what she thought was the flu, was actually treated for the flu, yet she had strep throat, but she wasn't treated for strep throat. So by the time she was hitting 105 fever and got to the ER and they checked her blood pressure and put her in ICU, she was already in full-blown septic shock. So she struggled for 18 days where we had prayer movements and tens of thousands of people praying, over 100 churches praying, and there were moments we thought, surely God's going to deliver my sister from this. After 18 days, on February 22nd of 2010, my sister, the sepsis went to her brain. And they unplugged her as a doctor sang the song, "It Is Well With My Soul," over her as she breathed her last breath. My mom and now have been in a process. We're writing a book together on grief and pain. So all this that I'm sharing is so fresh because I've written on this stuff in the past, but now hearing my mom process it as a mother who had a child pass away and how this ignited in her a passion to help other people with grief has been this remarkable journey for me to see her go through this. And it sounds like on Sunday morning you're doing some of the same stuff on Wednesday night here in this church, but talking about suffering and this idea of like just even if God doesn't do this. Because there were moments of deep pain and grief that I still carry with me from those 18 days. and a faith struggle that entered into my life that lasted for over a year. And it wasn't, for me, it wasn't a faith struggle of does God exist and or does God not exist, but it was like, when does God choose to intervene and when does God seem to kind of keep his hands off? But as they were about to unplug my sister, I was back in Memphis, so I wasn't able to be there. My brother, who at the time was a worship minister in Houston, wasn't able to be there. But it was my mom and my dad and my aunt and a few relatives and some friends who surrounded, and my brother-in-law, my sister's husband at the time, and even some nurses who were so emotionally involved with my family, they came in this moment even though they were off duty. And they surrounded Jenny's bed. And my mom took the lead in that room that day. And what she said was, we don't agree with what has happened. And this is the work of the enemy, and we don't agree with it. We hate this. But we're going to go around the room right now, and we're going to make a confession together. And my mom, she can be really direct. She can make you do things. And she said, I need to hear everybody confess with their mouth this statement. And she began to quote Daniel with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That we believe God had the power to save her, but even if he doesn't, we're not going to serve any other God. And like people had their heads down, and she was like, I need your eyes need to be on me. That's what my mom used to say. Listen to me with your eyes. Yeah, look at me. She said, we're going around the room. And together they went around the room making this confession. Even if God doesn't save Jenny right now, we're not bound down to any other God. And even the nurses made the confession. I don't know if you're a Hillsong United fan, but they just came out with a new album a few months ago, and there's a song on there called Another in the Fire. Even if you don't like music, I encourage you to go. I encourage you not just listen to it on iTunes. Go pull it up on YouTube and watch the live version of them singing the song, because there's a part in this song that you see in the live version that doesn't show up on iTunes if you just download the music. It's a song about another in the fire. In fact, the guy who writes the song, I don't even think he's ever on the stage with Hillsong. I think he's like a sound guy. But he wrote the song because he had a son who was going through some difficult health issues. So he wrote the song about another in the fire, that when you go through a fire, there's another with you. So it comes from the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego story. That even when you are in the fire of life, there is someone else. He is there with you. And as Hillsong United sings this live, and you can pull it up on YouTube and watch it, at the end, this guy and the lead guy for Hillsong, Joel Houston, begin going back and forth. And I don't think it was even planned. It was like, even if he doesn't, I'm not going to bow down to any other God. Even if he doesn't, I'm not changing my confession. Then my confession will remain in who Jesus is. My mom led them in that confession back in 2010. And it's something my family continues to go back to now. When my mom had cancer, when there have been some other things go on in the life of our family, when my niece, who was 9 at the time, who lost her mom, who 3 years ago attempted 2 different times to take her own life because of some brokenness in her life, this is what we kept coming back to. We're not going to bow down to any other God. So when my parents were leaving the hospital when my sister passed, they were... My mom basically lived in this hospital for 18 days with my brother-in-law. And they're walking out in February in Fort Worth, Texas. They're walking outside to a car, not knowing what the new normal would be or if there ever would be a new normal. And as they're walking down a hallway, the story goes that my mom stopped my dad in his tracks, squared up his shoulders and said, right now, Rick, I need you to tell me, what is it we believe? I feel like everything I've believed in, it's crumbling. I need you to tell me right now, before we go get in that car, what do we believe? And she said, my dad thought for a moment, and even when my dad tells his story now, he says he thought for a moment, and his response was just 4 words. The tomb is empty. The tomb is empty. And it's become an anthem for my parents now for 9 years. When my mom wakes up with night terrors, my dad just recites to her, the tomb is empty. When my dad suffers from depression, it's what my mom recites to him. The tomb is empty. I know I'm probably not supposed to say this as a preacher, but it's become so much of an anthem that I just permanently put it on my arm last year. The tomb is empty. When I brush my teeth and I flex in the mirror, just joking, I don't do that anymore. But I'm reminding myself every time I look in a mirror that the tomb is empty. This is the anthem of our lives. The tomb is empty. It's the anthem of our lives as Jesus followers. Real quick, three things that have really helped me with grief. I wrote these down the last few days as processing this. But number one, I've come to think of grief, that grief is like medicine in the sense that when it comes to sinuses or allergies, some people, Claritin D works really well for them. Some people, Claritin D doesn't seem to do anything. There's some antibiotics that may work really well for you that don't work really well for other people. There's some headache medicine that works well for some and doesn't work well for others. Some people are allergic to some forms of medicines, some are not. Grief is like medicine. And that how God has helped you walk some of your grief journeys, no matter what they are, the way God helped you and the word God gave you may not be the word that's going to help someone else in their grief journey. There are some people who have lost loved ones, and for them, the thought of their loved one being in the presence of Jesus and being in a better place, that gave them great peace. It didn't really give me a lot of peace when my sister died. Because for me, I thought that my niece would be a lot better off by having her mother in her presence, not by being away in heaven somewhere. So remember it in grief that what has helped you may be a story that needs to be told, but it may not be the exact word someone else needs to hear. This is why God is so creative. God works in a lot of different ways to heal us. Number two is that as a church, we need to equip and prepare people for the storms of life now. Every chance I get right now to talk to teenagers or college students, when I talk to young people, I want to encourage them to establish the foundation of your faith and what it is you believe about Jesus. Establish these foundations now, because if we wait until the storms of life hit, it may be too late. The story I keep coming back to in the Bible is in Matthew 14 when Peter sees Jesus walk on the water and Peter walks out there too, and then Peter sinks and Jesus, it says he caught him as he was sinking, and then I don't know how this went down, because all we're told is when they got back in the boat, Jesus said something and the wind ceased. And I would love to see how they got back into the boat. I don't know if Jesus walked with Peter or if they walked alone or if Jesus carried him, but it would have been really nice for Jesus to have calmed the sea, and then together, Jesus and Peter could have walked across calm water back into the boat. But instead, the way the story goes is they walked over the waves and through the storm into the boat, and then the waves ceased. And I think in the moment, that meant something to Peter. It taught him something about the character and power of Jesus. But I think it meant the most to Peter later on down in his life, later on in his life, when he's in prison cells. And he's reminding himself, there was a Jesus who walked with me over and through the storms of life before, and he's the same Jesus who can walk with me over the storms of life now. And we must equip people now as we prepare them for whatever storms may come. And thirdly, what has been so helpful for me recently in my life is groaning is a universal language. And in the church, we have to give voice to it. According to Romans 8, the Holy Spirit knows how to speak the language of the groan. That when all we have to offer up to God is an utterance or a moan or a groan or a sound, according to Romans 8, the Holy Spirit knows exactly what to do with that, and it is pleasing before God. And sometimes when we go through pain, it's all we have. And we're not impressing heaven with long, lengthy prayers. It's all I have is a deep sigh that I'm laying before heaven and trusting that God knows what to do with this. Last October, I had the chance to travel to Israel with my wife. And we led a tour through Israel, and we had a group of about 40 people. My parents had another group of about 40 people. And we would meet up at some of the sites and have worship services. And the one worship service I'll never forget is we met up for a worship service at the Garden Tomb, which is one of the sites that they think could have been where the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus happened. And even if it wasn't, what it looks like now is what a tomb owned by a wealthy man like Joseph of Arimathea would have looked like 2,000 years ago. And you get the chance to walk in a tomb and to see what it would have been like when Jesus was in there. And then you get a chance to walk out of a tomb. And you are overwhelmed with what it would have been like when Jesus did this. And then we had this worship service together. And I got to preach in front of about 80 people at a place, and even if that isn't the location, we were within a mile of where the greatest event in the history of the world has taken place, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Reminding myself and preaching to people, what God did for Jesus is what God's going to do for my sister Jenny, and what God's going to do for your loved ones in this room who have passed, and for all people that God calls his own. And you know what's really crazy? And Trey, wherever you are, if you want to go ahead and come up with your praise team, I think we're about to sing another song. And I didn't know what song you were about to sing because you chose Stronger. Is this the Hillsong, the one they wrote? Okay, good. Because I was about to tell a story and I wasn't going to worry if Hillsong didn't write it. But about 8 months after my sister passed back in 2010, the tombstone arrived and it was placed on her grave. And I think it was Thanksgiving of 2010 that one day we were at the house with the family and I said, I want to go out to Jenny's grave. And my wife was like, you want me to go with you? And I was like, I just need to go by myself. And all I took with me was 1 Corinthians 15, which is an entire chapter about the power of the resurrection. And this is back in 2010. I took with me an iPod at the time with a Hillsong. And I didn't really even know who Hillsong was at the time. But there was a song I'd heard of called Stronger, and you and I haven't talked at all before this moment about this. And for an hour, what I did is I read 1 Corinthians 15, and I listened to this song, Stronger, about how God is this powerful healer in our life. And I just was like, God, what you did for Jesus, I need you to pump in me right now that kind of faith to believe that not only is this the reality of what we will experience one day, but that that will give me the passion I need to love Memphis and to love my context as if Jesus is alive today. And God began to do it. And may God continue to do that for you tonight too.